Welcome back to Siren Radio with me, Jamie Rose. My guest today, makeup, freelance, live sound engineer, student at Lincoln University, doing your master's, I believe, graduated in 2022.
Yeah.
Was that undergrad in 2022?
And now I'm doing my master's in journalism.
Yes. All very exciting for you, as I can imagine. But yeah, no, thank you for doing this. Really do appreciate it. Part of the industry week that you're in, Thursday, 4 till 5. At uni. How are you feeling about that, by the way?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think that it's going to be good. I'm a little nervous. I've not really done a talk before, but I think that I hope that people will be interested in what I've got to say. I'm sort of going to give them a little bit of a rundown of what I do, who I am, and so it should be a little bit of fun, I'm hoping.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they definitely should be interested, because I mean, even going through it, I was just kind of having a look. All that you've done, and I was amazed by it. Do you know what I mean? First of all, talk me through, how do you get into it? Because obviously freelance, sound engineer, everything that I've seen on Instagram looks unbelievably complex. So how do you get into it, first of all?
Well, I actually started when I was doing my undergrad. I did my undergrad in sound and music production, and we got sent an email about this job at the Students' Union, to be a part of the tech crew, and I thought that sounded quite cool, so I applied for it and I ended up getting that job. And so I was like just a live tech sound engineer type, just helping out with whatever events they had going on at the Students' Union, and I did that for 2 years, and then I moved into the freelance world, and basically just it just kind of exploded from there, which was amazing. I ended up working for Billie Eilish, The Killers, name a few.
It's all written down. It's absolutely mental, some of the stuff that you've done. I mean, you also have worked at, I think this is probably the most amazing thing, Quack.
yes.
Also, Quack. Forget Billie Eilish, forget The Killers. Quack is where it is at.
Quack is where it's at.
Quack is where it's at. Does it take a while to master, then, really, when you're doing it? Because there's so much, like, it took me a while to even understand the whole aspects of radio, and then there's this, and then there's then some on more.
Yeah, so I mean, it does take a little bit. It does take a little bit of working out, but I had some really good people to guide me. They kind of let you loose on Quack when you're doing lights and stuff, and they have a amazing lighting desk at the Students' Union, and it's basically just pressing buttons. They make it so it's nice and easy for students to kind of get a hold of, keep having a go at, and you just get better and better with the practice and just pressing buttons, and then when you've mastered that, it's kind of then getting into the nitty-gritty of it. And that took me probably about 3 or 4 years to get like into that nitty-gritty programming side of things. But Quack itself was actually quite a nice shift. As much as it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. It was a lot of fun. You know, you have those cheesy bangers. I'm all about cheesy bangers. I love cheesy bangers.
Oh, I love it. I love the whole aspect of it. I think it's great. Do you think there is an idea that you kind of just play about with it then? Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Is that kind of how you learn? You don't necessarily learn through being meticulous with it, but you learn more through kind of playing about with it, because there is so much to it. There is the lights, there is the sound, there is everything. Obviously, for you to work with, you know, the likes of The Killers, Billie Eilish, you've worked at Download, Reading Festival, Sam Fender, which I'm especially jealous of, Metallica, which I'm even more jealous of.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do you think there's an idea of it where you're just going to kind of play about with it more than you have to?
Definitely. I mean, there is obviously, like, when you're looking at stages and stuff, you have to be fairly sensible in the sense of there is a lot of electricity. You've got to kind of understand, like, don't touch things that are plugged in. Like, that's just the main thing. But other than that, it is literally just pressing buttons, seeing what things do and finding out, like, oh, okay, that button does that, so I can use that when, you know, there's a big moment, or if there's a big chorus, I'd like to press that button because that button does that. And I don't know. I think everyone learns differently, because I know that there was a lot of people that I worked with who were a bit more meticulous than me. I'm quite a flighty kind of person anyway. So I was just like, ooh, what does that button do?
And just doing pure curiosity.
Yeah, honestly. And the amount of times I had people going, go, don't press that, don't press that. And me going, oh, what?
I'm just playing about. I thought this would be cool.
What's this big red button? What, you know?
Well, they still bought the stations in. No, let's just press it. Yeah. No, absolutely. Do you think there is a lot of freedom in what you get to do then?
Yeah, definitely. I think because there's so many different elements of it as well. There is the lights, the sound, there's the video. And then when you get onto sort of bigger things, when I started going freelance, you start seeing the amount of people that it takes to put on one show.
Yeah.
And they, you know, there's pyro people that they do confetti and cold sparks and stuff. And then you've got people building the stage, people that specifically look after the instruments. Like, there is, if you're into that kind of world, there is something for you.
How, just on average, I mean, what would probably be one of your favorites that you've done, perhaps?
I mean, for me, Billie Eilish, because I love Billie Eilish. I'm such a big fan of Billie Eilish.
I think she's great. Is that a kind of come to earth moment for you, is kind of like an idol
a little bit? So bit. I mean, obviously I was doing follow spot, which is when you basically you operate the light that follows the artist around on stage. So the artist might decide that, you know, because Billie Eilish is Billie Eilish, she decided that she wanted to just sprint down the other side of the stage and then sprint the other way. And I had to just be there focused the whole time.
You know that that's happening though?
No.
Before she does that. What? So it is just a case of...
It's just a case of being focused, making sure that you're on it, making sure that you are concentrating, because it's no good if you're sat there and your head's in the clouds and then all of a sudden she's on the other side of the stage and you've got to sort of move the light. It's all a bit awkward. But
is there a lot of time, is there a lot of planning that goes into, or is it like when stuff like that happens on stage, do you just like kind of, you have to adapt with it, you have to roll
with
it?
I think there is a lot of adapting.
Or is there perhaps with, like, I don't know, Bad Guy, perhaps when she's running up and down, I don't know, just maybe Bad Guy, is it kind of an idea where you're like, this is going to happen on this song, follow, get the light to here or get the sound here?
Sometimes there is. Sometimes they know that the artist is going to do something. For example, when I was doing Metallica, one of their songs, one of their slower songs, forgive me, I can't remember the name of the song.
Yeah, no.
They knew I was James Hetfield's follow spot.
Yeah.
And they said to me, make sure that you're at the back of the stage, because he's going to sit on the amps and smoke a cigarette, and he's going to stay there for a little bit, and then he's going to wander to the stage left or stage right. I can't remember which one, but that was like a moment where I knew something was going to happen.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you just have to
roll with it.
You just have to be adaptable. You just have to be able to like go, oh, okay, we're doing that now. Great, cool. And not have any problem with it. Just get on with it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. obviously, Billie Eilish, in concert, but I mean, you've also worked at a festival, so you've worked at Leeds, Reading. What year would that have been?
It was all 2022.
All 2022, okay, so all 2022. What stages are you kind of working on at that point? Are you working on a various number of them?
So for Download, I just worked on the main stage.
Okay.
They had a whole load of us crew. So what we're called is local crew. None of us are local, but that's just what they're called. Because we are not the touring crew. It's just to differentiate between the two of us.
Oh, do they have the touring crew, especially when they're at these festivals for the sets? Also, do they have the touring crew and also the crew that's at the festival?
Yeah, so...
Does that get quite disjointed then, really, between two different sets of...
I think it depends really on the... I think it kind of depends on, like, the organisation of the crew itself. And the vast majority of them, I don't think I can think of a single one that hasn't been disorganised. But I've heard stories about things that have been disorganised and it can become a little bit disjointed. But the vast majority of the time, you are there to help the touring crew do what they need to do, because they are the ones who know the set, they are the ones who know the show. And so our job is just to make it happen, and their job is to tell us how to make it happen, if that makes sense.
Okay, so what? So you're kind of, in theory, then shadowing someone that has kind of been on tour with them in a certain way.
Yeah, in a sense. Like, so like I said, there's all of these different departments, sound, lights, video, etc. And they'll split us off, us local crew, they'll split us into groups, and some of us will be the lighting guys, some of us will be the sound guys, some of us will be with the video guys, and we usually have different colours of high-vis jackets on so that everyone can differentiate. Yeah. So it's really, because obviously they're not going to know our names, no, they just want to be able to like look at us and go, I know that you're like, with me. And so what we normally do is like a lot of making sure that their stuff is in the right place, making sure that we're in the right place, and making sure that we're ready to work, because, you know, nobody's got the time to be waiting around for people, you know, having a fag or having lunch or whatever else people might do.
Constantly on the go backstage, because I mean, I've been in festivals, but it's always been quite calm. You see them on stage, people just running kind of back and forward to, you know, the wires and, and the sound and all that. Is it quite manic when you're kind of backstage at something like Download?
Yes. I mean, to give you an idea, my shift at Download for four nights in a row, because it was the 20th anniversary, so it's four nights.
Yeah, okay.
I did a 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. shift.
Okay, what time's festival end at then?
So the festival would finish up at about 9:30, 10. That's when the closer would finish, and we would be waiting there to make sure that the headliner was off and the next headliner was in, and that would take 12 hours overnight. So
just from one headliner to another?
Yeah, very much so.
Why would it take so long? Because you've got to essentially start from scratch.
Yes, so you have to take the whole of one headliner down.
Yeah.
And then that usually takes until about 2 a.m. Mm. And then the next headliner's trucks will all show up, and then we've got to build it all back up from nothing. Because everyone, obviously, every artist has their own vision of how their stage wants to look and how they want their show to go, because you can't really give everyone, you know, that it's not, with artists, it's not one size fits all, because you obviously, at Reading, you had Billie Eilish into The Killers, into Sam Fender. Those are three very different vibes. Still great, but
is it different towards a festival than it is maybe an arena or stadium?
Very much so, definitely.
Because I suppose with an arena and a stadium show, you would have more set up behind, because it's a touring schedule.
Yeah.
More than it's not, it's Reading's stage, perhaps.
Yeah.
But like a kind of stadium show, it then becomes their stage? Does that kind of make sense?
Very much so.
Is there a way between, is it, which one's easier, would you say?
I wouldn't say either of them are particularly easy.
It sounds like a nightmare to do the festival one if it's like 10 p.m. till 10 a.m.
It's pretty tiring at festivals, but obviously with festivals, the joy is that you get like the festival vibes, and obviously like there is a lot of joy in that. As much as it's tough, and I sort of like, I was, by the end of it, I was like, why did I do this to myself? But at the end of it, when I got home, I was like, I want to go back, you know?
Yeah, and enjoy it,
But with stadiums and arenas, I haven't done too many stadiums, to be fair. I did one stadium show, and it was Muse, and so obviously you can imagine Muse is just insane.
Yeah, but Muse itself, you've already hit the high point.
Fully.
Surely every other stadium show after that has to be much easier, Mary, than Muse. I've seen Muse when they're just on stage.
They are mental. Absolutely insane.
I suppose that has to be for like sound. You have to hit sound and lights right for Muse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with Muse, we did the load-in the day before. So what we normally do when we do arena shows is we'll show up, we'll get a call time. It's usually anywhere between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. Sometimes they're nice to us and say 10 a.m., but that's not very often. And so you show up, you do 5 hours of work. It's usually split into five-hour calls. That's what they call it. And you do 5 hours of work, and then the next lot of people will come in and take over. And so you kind of, you're only doing like the beginning of it, and it's okay. it's not too intense. It usually is intense at the start when all the trucks show up and you've got to like get all the flight cases off and start building it up.
It's like I've seen the time lapse videos, you know, the time lapse videos, and it just looks mental. I think the most mentalist one would be Rammstein. I don't know if you've seen Rammstein.
I haven't.
They honestly, please go. It sounds for lights and sound. It looks like the idea of hell.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
You have to like build. They have to build like towers and that. It looks more like it looks like Tomorrowland constantly night after night, which is mental.
I think the most insane one was.
You get some insane demands.
There are some crazy ones. We had, going back to Billie Eilish, she had like this enormous automated box that she basically jumped out of. And that weighed more than the truck itself. And so that was insane to try and get that on and off stage. But I think the most crazy like piece of set that I've ever seen was I'm trying to remember his name. Oh my god, it's like at the back, it's right at the tip of my tongue.
Where would it have been at? See if I can. Where would it have been at?
It was at Sheffield, but
I thought it might have been at a download or something.
No,
like that,
it was one of those tours. You know, the chap that sang Body Shop.
Sam Fender. Yeah. No, Sam Fender. Sam Smith.
Thank you. I knew it was Sam something, and I was like, it's not Sam Fender, because we've just been talking about Sam Fender.
Sam Smith
had a whole, like, three times the size, maybe even 10 times the size of him, golden statue of himself that he was taking on tour with him. And
as you do.
Yeah, as you do. Yeah, as you Why do. Not? That was the craziest thing I think I've ever seen.
That surely has to come in, if it's 10 foot, that has to come in like a trailer of itself.
Yeah, it did. It came in like 3 or 4 different pieces in one truck by itself, and then obviously like we have to unload that.
Yeah.
That was mental.
I can imagine that'd be insane.
Yeah, sometimes it gets a bit dicey when you have things that are that heavy, and obviously like all you've got is manpower, and you just have to kind of hope for the best. But I think like seeing things like that, you sort of look at them and you're like, how on earth is this ever going to work?
And it does,
it always does, and it always looks incredible. And I'm always amazed at how it all comes together at the end of, you know. You see all these flight cases coming off of trucks. You see of 60 trucks turn up.
Is that how many? What?
Can be.
Can it be? Really? 60,
yeah. 60 I think Metallica had 83 trucks.
That is mad.
Yeah.
That is mental.
Yeah, it can get pretty insane.
Love the way you paper straws there. That'll say 83 trucks for Metallica.
Yeah.
That is mental. Yeah.
It's, you know, sort of what I think about it as well. I'm like, yeah, it's all very well kind of doing paper cups and paper straws, getting people to recycle. And it's just all of these chucks.
That is mad.
And they can't do anything or go anywhere, so they just have to sit there, and it's just like, oh my god, it's crazy. I think I didn't do Taylor Swift. I haven't done her Eras tour, but I've seen, like, I'm in a bunch of groups and stuff, and people do that sort of thing.
Oh, what, so is there like a kind of community of people that are kind of...
Oh yeah, nice, very much so.
That are kind of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that kind of do it. How do you end up going kind of freelance then? More so than having a permanent thing? Or is it just that lights and sound is naturally a freelance gig?
Yeah.
Because you're going from one thing to another.
Well, there's a lot of companies that you kind of freelance for. Like, I freelance for, I think I counted it the other day, like 6 companies in total, something like that.
Yeah.
But
they all have specific shows and events that they want
to do. Okay. So there's one... company that I work for that does pretty much exclusively Leeds Arena, and they're pretty much like the house crew for Leeds Arena. And then there's another crew that I work for that's almost exclusively Sheffield. Sometimes they switch about, and sometimes they'll send us to crazy places like Scarborough or Huddersfield or Birmingham.
What, is this Scarborough Open Air?
Yeah, Scarborough Open Air.
Have you worked that then, Scarborough?
Yes, I did Pulp there.
Is that different then? Because that's outdoors, so is that a different environment? Because obviously
That's a bit. That is a bit of an odd one.
I suppose you don't need the lights because you're in natural light. If that makes sense.
No, oh, you really? Still need the lights.
What is it? The exact same thing as you would in an arena as you are with.
Pretty much, except with a lot more tarpaulin.
There's a lot more what?
Tarpaulin. So you know, like just plastic covering for everything because obviously it rains.
Oh, it's out. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we did
that
it.
Is a job in itself then, really? Just all that?
Yeah, it's a lot. Our Scarborough Open Air Theatre suffers from not having a whole lot of storage because of where it's actually situated.
Yeah.
When the trucks show up, they basically back themselves onto what we call a dock, and it's essentially just a wooden floor.
Yeah.
At Scarborough Open Air Theatre, the dock is a movable one, so you have to roll it from one side of the theatre to the other side of the theatre. It takes
about... In case you weren't doing enough,
yeah, exactly. and so you have to literally get about 60 people around this enormous wooden structure on wheels, and then you have to lock it all off, because obviously you can't have it going anywhere. And then at the end of the shift, if you're not knackered enough already, you then have to roll it back because that's where the people stand. And then when you come and do the loadout, which is at the end of the gig, we had one where we showed up for the loadout and some poor audience member had a medical problem.
Yes.
And so the ambulance obviously had to deal with that.
Yeah.
But that meant we couldn't roll the dock anywhere. Yeah. So we had to wait for the audience to clear out, wait for the ambulance to clear out, and we were all just waiting and waiting and waiting
Wouldn't know any of this. I mean, do you kind of go to these concerts and kind of concerts and gigs a lot without even working on them? Kind of, do you have a different outlook than when you used to then, before, you're just kind of working on them now. Do you have a different output now from, like, because I
definitely
have never kind of done it, but I just wouldn't imagine that there'd be like that many trucks and that much, like 60 people for one specific thing.
It's a different mindset. Like,
yeah,
I remember when I was like 14, I went to a Black Veil Brides gig because they were like my favorite band at the time, absolutely loved them, and
good choice.
Thank you. And so I went along to that, and I remember just having an amazing time. And I think back to it now and I'm like, how was I not taking note of the set? How was I not taking note of the lights? I went to a gig recently, My Chemical Romance, back in 2021.
Yes.
And I was staring at all the lights, trying to work out what they were called. And me and my friend, she also does the same thing as me.
Oh, so you're kind of studying it at this point.
We were literally studying it, and we were going, how many connections do you think that has? How many universes do you think the lighting tech has to deal with? And we were just, super nerdy about it.
Does it alter kind of brain chemistry now when you actually do have
definitely,
to?
Definitely, definitely.
Because you see a different,
Yeah, no, because you can sort of, I don't want to say like the illusion is kind of broken, but it kind of is a little bit.
It'd because, be like if you worked on a magic show, you'd know how the tricks are done. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still magic. I still love going to gigs. Yeah. I mean, I'll still try and get to gigs. I'm going to see Evil Scarecrow in Nottingham in a couple of weeks' time. Yeah. And that's something that I've actually paid for to go to, which is not something that happens very often anymore. But it's... You kind of can't help but think to yourself, how many vans did that take? How many trucks did that take? Yeah. How many people? And when you see the people kind of scurrying back and forth, doing a changeover or whatever, you sort of, there's like a level of empathy that I have now that... that I'm like, I know that it looks, because the whole point is that it looks easy and it looks simple.
Seamless.
And it's easy to change over. It's easy to get round any problems. But, you know, there are so many people backstage. It takes an army to get a show going. And for, like, larger artists, for big gigs, you do genuinely probably have about 200 people there at any given time just to get one person on stage.
Yeah. Like, wow. 200 people for one person.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is pretty crazy. Peter Kay is one that I've done quite a lot of times. He's done Sheffield quite a bit, and he also did Leeds recently as well. He tours his own sofas, which is insane.
Okay.
I love that. I was honestly thinking to myself, I would love to be in a position where I was so bougie that I could just,
that you could just
tour my own sofa. Like, why not?
Yeah. Is it different doing a comedy show than it is doing a music show then? What's the main difference in that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it obviously depends on the caliber of comedian, and it obviously depends on the caliber of artist as well.
Of course. Yes.
Because Peter Kay, like I said, he is a huge comedian. He is superb, so popular.
Massive, yeah.
Massive. And he tours his own, like, roller coaster track that we have to build and put
into
the
roof. Surely some of the things you now have to kind of go, why do we need this? Could you not just skip this for the tour?
I wish. But it works for the show. And that's the thing. You got to just make the show work. And as much as you might think to yourself, oh my God, this is insane.
Why are you doing this?
You do kind of, when you see the payoff for it, you're just like, okay, fair enough. That makes sense.
It makes sense why it's happening.
But we did Shagged, Married, Annoyed with the podcasters.
Yes. Chris Ramsey.
Chris Ramsey and his wife.
Chris and Rosie Ramsey.
Yes. Lovely people. I've seen like their podcast and they just seem brilliant. Yeah. But honestly, their setup was so chill. They basically just built
podcasting
their living room.
Isn't it really?
Yeah, they just built their living room on stage. It was brilliant. They had a couple of lampshades.
Was that quite simplistic then, really?
Yeah, it was just a bit of flooring. They toured this really cute IKEA sofa and some lampshades and a couple of microphones. And that was pretty much it. That's going to be so easy for you.
That's going to be so annoying for someone that does stuff like that. I was looking on your Instagram before we did this. You met Rod Stewart.
I did.
What other kind of famous faces have you met that you was a little bit starstruck by?
I think Rod Stewart was like one of the biggest ones that I met.
It's Rod Stewart.
I mean, that was kind of,
do you ever
such
kind of
a
see the acts, really?
Sometimes. You sometimes don't.
See them in passing.
Yeah, it was mostly in passing. We did The Who, and I saw Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey coming off stage.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit starstruck, like, wow, oh my God.
It's The Who.
How can you not be? And then as well, when I was doing Billie Eilish, she actually walked past me underneath the stage when she was going onto the stage to start the gig. Yeah. And that kind of had me a little bit like, wow, oh my God, I can't believe
that. I'd go. If someone like
honestly.
That, like Sam Fender for me, Sam Fender walked past me, or any of the Arctic Monkeys, or Liam Gallagher, or someone like that, I couldn't stop myself. I'd just have to stop working.
You did kind of get told, like, obviously, I try not to get starstruck anymore. I don't really get starstruck anymore because I feel like I've seen enough famous people to realise that they are really genuinely just people. And as much as they might have that aura kind of thing about them, I tend to just try and treat them like everyone else because that's how they prefer to be. But when I met Rod Stewart, Boy George was just sat there having a chat with us as well.
Just casually. Why was Rod Stewart and Boy George together?
I think Boy George was opening for him or something.
Boy George was opening for Rod Stewart?
Yeah.
Well, you'd want to be at that, wouldn't you?
I know. And we were just in the same room and they were just chilling after the show. And I was like, this is pretty insane. Like, I'm not sure what I did to be here, what I deserve to do to be here. But
you get a bit of kind of imposter syndrome from it for stuff like that.
Definitely,
really, when you actually, like, for stuff like being there for like Billie Eilish and being there for like the massive rock headlines at Download, do you kind of think, this is, how have I ended up in this situation? How has this happened to, like, cause I feel like I would. I feel like I'd just be like, I do sometimes
stop and look around and go, damn, that's pretty cool.
And there's got to be a sense of pride from you as well for everything that you put up and see the show and see everyone having a great time.
Yeah, definitely. Especially at festivals and stuff, because obviously when you're at the back of stage waiting for the headliners to come off, and they come off and you can't avoid them seeing you and you seeing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some artists that don't want to be seen. They just want to get off stage, get into the car and go. And that's completely fair. They're probably knackered.
Yeah.
But quite a lot of the time when they're riding on that show high, they are so lovely. Kurt, I think it's Kurt, the guitarist from Metallica.
Yes.
He came off stage. He was waving to everyone and he shook a couple of people's hands and stuff. He was just on such a brilliant, like, show high, and it was just amazing to see how grateful they were for us, even though we hadn't even done anything.
I'm not kind of backstage like what you are, but I've always kind of wondered what it's like for people when they are back, when they come off. Is it still like, has there ever been any some ones where it's been like, oh, that didn't go wrong, and they've kind of, you know, or has there been anything like that, or has it always kind of been that people are on this such a high?
I think it's honestly, it's normally that people are on a massive high. I think that the only one that I can remember one specifically that was a little bit rude to us. I won't name any names.
Yeah, no, I don't want you to name names.
But that one, it does kind of leave you with a bit of a bad taste in your mouth, because you're like, well, I have just built your stage for you. You've done so much work,
and then it's like...
But I can't say that is the majority of them. You know, 99% of the artists that we see are so incredibly grateful and so appreciative and so nice. They are genuinely lovely, down-to-earth people. I mean...
Just normal people,
they are.
You don't really think about it, really, do you? you just don't think about stuff like
that. I don't know if you know Cassiette.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw her backstage at the Engine Shed, and I was just grabbing something from the storage cupboard, and I was trying not to bother her because she was just chilling, and she was just, after the show, she was just having a chat with the guys. I think she was with Frank Turner. Frank Turner and the Rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
And so I was just sort of chilling, kind of doing my own thing. And she just piped up and said, thank you so much. And that's all, you know, that's all you need.
You wasn't, kind of involved. You were just getting
something. No, I was just getting something. I was just chilling, completely minding my business and trying to let, you know, obviously I was like, it's Cassie over there. But you kind of hold that inside. You kind of have to, so I was just holding that inside.
You kind of close the door behind you and just squeal afterwards.
Yeah, totally. When you're in there, you got to keep that professional face on, but you leave and you're like, oh my God.
You've got to be like, oh my God, they just...
It's just that little token of thank you so much, that appreciation. And that really does go such a long way. And it does make you feel like, you know, you're actually contributing to something.
Yeah.
And the way that the artists and the crew treat you is just, because they're all such nice people. Yeah. And everyone is on such a good vibe in these sorts of things. You just kind of can't help but keep smiling. I always find myself on shift where I'm always like, oh, I've got work today. And then I get on shift and I'm grinning and having a laugh with everyone and having a great time. It's always just such a good time, such a good vibe.
Absolutely. Before I kind of let you go, one, do you think that you've got the best job in the world?
I have got the best job in the world, and I want to keep taking it further, to be honest. I think my job it's amazing. The hours can be long. The times, it can be tough when you have a 6 a.m. start in Leeds and you're starting in Lincoln. That can be a bit of a difficult one, especially if you've got a drive.
Yes.
But I think because of where it takes you and the opportunities that you get from it, I can't imagine myself doing anything else.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'd love to go on tour. That's I've got aspirations for more.
What is next for you? Would you say that going on a tour,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that would be like the next step, because you just keep learning and you keep growing.
A natural progression.
Yeah, a lot of people are very happy just doing local crewing, and they just do it because they love it, and I think that's amazing. And for me, I love it as well, but
you're going on tour with
someone. I want to go on tour with someone.
Yeah, you're going on tour.
I think a lot of people would say that that's like the next step for them, because it is very much a ladder. It's you start from the bottom of the ladder and you work your way up rung by rung. You just have to keep pushing and keep trying and keep showing how much you care and how much you want to learn. Because I think some people will suffer from the fact that they just kind of expect things to happen for them without actually putting the effort in.
No, absolutely.
But you have to put the effort in. And I think if you do, good things come from it. And I mean, I've seen so much cool stuff just from going about.
Just from working.
Yeah.
Just from being you've seen so much cool stuff and you're being paid for it as well.
Exactly.
So why would you not? Yeah.
Exactly. And you just have to keep trying. Mm. I think that's the really, really major thing. And whenever I tell people about my job, they do think that it's super cool. And then I tell them about the hours and they go, oh, no, that's not for me.
Oh, yes,
but you just, there are going to be good things and there are going to be bad things about everything. Yeah. You can't expect everything to be absolutely perfect.
No, of course.
The hours can be tough. You know, if you start
could
at 4 a.m., you finish
drive.
At 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And somewhere in between, you've got to drive home and drive back again.
It's just...
It can take the whole day away from you.
It's big.
It can be big.
One of my final questions is literally going to be, what is your piece of advice? Would you say that is your piece of advice? You've just got to keep going with it, and you've just got to really kind of be persistent with it.
Yeah, I think that probably would be it. I think you have to keep... you just have to keep going, and the more you want it, the more things will happen.
Yeah.
You know, I've obviously, I've not been in freelancing for very long. I've been in freelancing for just under a year,
but
coming
you've done
up to
so much of it as well.
Exactly, and this is all just in the last year, and it's still mind-boggling to me.
It's so mad. It's so mad for everything that you've done.
I mean, I don't know if I'm really the best person to come to for advice, because I am obviously quite new to the world, and I see people who are ahead of me in this career path.
Yeah, but you've got into quite a would you say it is quite a competitive thing to get into?
I would say so. There
so,
is.
I mean, I mean, you're someone that's worked. I always think some of the people that have that have worked in it for 25 years or whatever is one thing. But Dev, you know, you've got that job 20 years ago. What does it take to get that job now?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what's important.
Yeah, it is. I think it is different. There is definitely a lot of differences from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
There are some older guys on the crew who just love it, and they just do it because they love it. I know one guy who is, I think, some sort of big shot lawyer or something, and he just literally comes along occasionally to gigs and just does it because he wants to, for a little bit of extra pocket money. And it can be that. It can literally be anything you want it to be.
That's insane.
Yeah, it can be a little bit of extra pocket money. It can be your whole life if you want it to be. I know that some people who do it every single day of the week, day in, day out, that is what they do.
Yeah.
For me, obviously, I have my master's as well, so I'm studying journalism, which means that I don't do it as often as I'd like to.
Yeah.
But I have to kind of weigh up if I'm going to spend a day in Sheffield building a stage, or if I'm going to spend a day writing an essay for my course.
But you're constantly on the go in some kind.
Yeah, it's always constant working towards something. And
Will you do it full-time after the Masters?
I don't know, to be fair. I keep thinking about what I'm going to do after the Masters, and I think it's just going to be a matter of finding out when I get there.
which is a great place to kind of be in. You know,
As much as Lincoln is an amazing city to be in,
it
can be a little bit tricky to get to places. So after
Leeds and Sheffield and your Manchester's and your London's and all that, where there's a constant... I mean, yeah, constantly.
There's a constant stream of work in those sorts of places.
I mean, London's got about, it's got to have about another, it's got to have about six, it's got to have six O2 academies. It's got,
yeah, it's got craziness.
Yeah, it's got so much for you to do in a Manchester or Leeds or London.
Oh, yeah.
No, so do you think that's the natural next step, really?
Yeah, I think it's just to get somewhere where there's that constant stream. Like, yeah. I've got a little bit of... I have a contact in the... who does sound for things like Taskmaster and Love Island, and he does Saturday Night Takeout, Graham Norton, things like that.
Big TV shows.
Big TV shows. Yeah. And I went and shadowed him on Graham Norton. And for that... I was
who was on
and it was the New Year's Eve special.
Oh, so it's a decent
2022, I want to say, or 2023.
I'll have a look after this interview. I'm going to have a look to see who was on.
They were promoting Empire of Light, if that helps.
Oh, okay, so yeah, it had been trying to think if Empire of Light, so it had been Olivia Colman, I would have thought.
Yeah,
it might have been Olivia Colman, and it would have been Daniel
Kaluuya. And her co-star, who I disgracefully cannot remember the name of.
I know, I can picture his face.
Yeah,
I can't do the same, don't worry about it, Mary. I can picture his face.
And there was a couple of others, some other famous faces, which I was sort of like, yeah, this is pretty cool. Like, I enjoyed that. And it was really nice as well. Graham Norton was another one who's super down to earth, super nice guy.
Graham Norton strikes me as someone.
Yeah, he's just absolutely. I almost walked straight into him, and he was just like, absolutely no worries. I didn't even realise who he was until I looked up, and I was like, oh my god,
that is Graham Norton.
That is actually Graham Norton in the flesh.
Yeah. That's the just as well. The best chat shows in the UK. Yeah. Just casually
walking around.
No, walked into him. Oh no.
But I was surprised at. Really, like, I was expecting TV to... It is a different beast, of course, but it's not as different as I was expecting it to be. And I was kind of grateful for that in a sense of I've got that background where I understand the sound and the tech stuff.
Yeah.
And I was able to pick it up really quickly and transfer that knowledge over to the slightly different things that were TV.
Yeah.
And so that was, I think, the best... like feeling was understanding, like, I know how interviews work thanks to my journalism, and I understand how the backstage stuff works thanks to my work, and to kind of conglomerate
the whole TV show.
Just
run your whole chat show. Not only interview the guests, but also set up everything else.
It's just me.
Yeah,
it's just
it's
my
you doing
whole
everything.
Thing.
Yeah, doing everything. From production to...
BBC, if you're listening, hit me up.
The one-woman show.
Oh, absolutely.
You want to pitch that? Next time you're at the BBC, you want to pitch that. Thank you for coming in. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Very, very much appreciated.
Yeah. Wednesday goes out tomorrow, 4 till 5. Thursday, 4 till 5, industry week. Do you know what room it's in?
It is in the TV studio Alfred Tennyson Building. Do come along, 4 p.m. till 5 p.m.
Yeah, please do, because I, by the way, I've loved every single minute of this. It's been absolutely amazing. One of my favourite interviews I've done.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, best of luck with everything in the future.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully everything goes okay with the speech.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.